Okay, let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, in verse 4 through 14 this morning, we will be talking about the topic of discipline. And it's very easy to see that as we read through this section. Let's just read through it a little bit and think about discipline as we read through this. In verse 4, it says, "You have not resisted, or not yet resisted, to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness." So you see the repetition of that word discipline over and over and over again in this section. In fact, 8 times and 9 times, if you count the one that's implied in verse 10, we can see very easily that we're talking about the subject of discipline. And in fact, this section in Hebrews is the key passage in the New Testament on the subject of discipline. Because we call a passage a key passage when the author tells us what he's going to be talking about. In other words, we don't have to guess. We don't have to infer from what he's saying. He flat out tells us in verse 7, "It is for discipline that you endure." So we're talking about discipline and very clearly seen in this section. And this will be an explanation of suffering. Why do we suffer? Well, the author is going to say one of the reasons that believers suffer is because it's God's program of discipline. And we'll get to that word discipline. Try to put out of your mind the connotation that you get from that word in English when we go through the section, because it's going to mean something a little different. Now in verse 4 through 6, we have two different attitudes towards suffering. And that'll be the key that the author uses to get into this section on discipline, because there's two different ways that suffering can be viewed. The first way is the Hebrews' attitude towards suffering, and that's pretty much all of our attitudes and human viewpoint attitude towards suffering. In verse 4, he says, "You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood, and you're striving against sin." So the Hebrews had forgotten that there were people who died for their faith, and he's saying, "You haven't done that yet. You're not so bad off. You know, you think you're in a bad situation, but you're still breathing. That's pretty good." The word he uses there, resisted, when he says, "You have not yet resisted," it's a military term. And it means to stand in opposition against, in a line of battle. So it's a battle, is the illustration he's using. And in verse 3, we had the ultimate example of someone who died for his faith. And it's the ultimate example because verse 3 it says, "For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Well, the him he's talking about is Jesus. And Jesus is our ultimate example of suffering because he didn't deserve it. And he's the only one in human history that didn't deserve to suffer. I mean, we can say sometimes, you know, well, gee, I didn't really deserve that. But you know, as sinners, we don't even deserve the air we breathe. We can't ask for, you know, if we really asked for what we deserved, it would be very unpleasant for us if we got what we really deserved. But Jesus did not deserve to suffer. And he suffered to the point of death, and even death on the cross, the most humiliating way to die in their estimation when they wrote this book. So over the years, and if you look back at chapter 11 and verse 37, the author of Hebrews has just finished talking about people who patiently endured their suffering. And in verse 37, he says, they were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword, they went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. So when he gets over to chapter 12 and resumes his exhortation to these guys, he says, you haven't yet resisted to the point of shedding blood, so you're not as bad off as you think. They had also forgotten Proverbs chapter 3, 11 through 12. And that's what he quotes here in verse 5 and 6. When he says, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. Now, this is kind of an interesting statement in verse 5, because it says, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. Now, sometimes we think of dispensations, and we think, well, the Old Testament doesn't apply to believers, right? Yes and no. Does this say the Old Testament applies to believers? He says it's addressed to you as sons. Well, in a strict interpretation of Proverbs, that's not written to church-age believers. But Proverbs is a book of object lessons. It's not dispensational. It applies to all believers. Look back at Proverbs for a second, in verse 11 and 12. I'd like to mention a few things about discipline before we start in Proverbs. Back up in Hebrews, that word discipline is the word paideia. Paideia means the education, correction, and training of a child. Now, remember when I said discipline is not the same in the Greek as we have the connotation in English? Because in English, we think of discipline as punishment, don't we? You get disciplined when? When you've been bad. Well, that's not the idea in Greek at all. That word paideia means education. It means training. It doesn't mean just punishment. Now, back in Proverbs 3, we can see in verse 11, it says, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. And that's what the author of Hebrews is quoting. So we have reject, don't reject it, and don't loathe it. Now, back up to the New Testament, stop in the book of Acts, in chapter 7. In Acts chapter 7 and verse 22, we have the word that's used over in Hebrews chapter 12. Acts 7:22, and it'll be the same word as discipline in Hebrews. In verse 22, it says, Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. And that word educated is the same word. You see how it doesn't just mean punishment. It doesn't just mean something you get when you've been bad. Acts 22, on your way back to Hebrews, stop at Acts 22 and verse 3. And this is Paul talking about himself. And in verse 3 he says, I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated under Gamaliel. Now do you suppose that means Gamaliel spanked Paul when he didn't do something right? No, he educated him. That's what it's talking about. And that's that same word. It's translated as training. In Ephesians 6, stop at Ephesians 6. Or it's translated discipline over here. It's training in 2 Timothy 3:16. You can look that one up. But in Ephesians 6, 4, it says, Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So it's a training process, is the idea. Now, the Greek word is much broader than simply punishment. So we have to set that aside as we look at this section, because we think of discipline only as punishment. It involves warnings. It involves exhortations. It involves instructions, encouragement, and corrective measures. Corrective measures are included, but they're just one part of what paideia refers to. Now, the natural response to discipline is given in verse 5, back in Hebrews 12, or in verse 11 of Proverbs 3. In fact, Proverbs 3 maybe translates it a little easier for us to understand. And there are two natural reactions to God's training program, His discipline. And the first one is the reaction of our will. How does my will react to God's training program? And the second one is our emotions. How does my emotions react to God's training program? Well, the first one, it says, My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. Remember back in Proverbs 3:11 how that read? Do not reject the discipline of the Lord. And that's how our will responds to God's discipline program, His training program. We reject it. How do our emotions respond? Nor faint when you are reproved by Him. Or, as it has in Proverbs, or loathe it. Don't loathe His discipline program. So our emotions, we hate discipline. Our will, we reject discipline. That's the natural response as sinful human beings. We don't like God's discipline program. We reject it with our will and we hate it with our emotions. Now there's another attitude towards suffering. That's the Hebrews attitude. That's the human viewpoint attitude towards suffering. But God looks at suffering a little bit differently. And that's verse 6. It says, For those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines. So God sees our education as an act of love. Now the principle is, God sees love as doing what is best for us, not what makes us feel warm and fuzzy. That's how we can link suffering with God's love. And that's a long link for us to make, or a difficult link, isn't it? When we're suffering, you're probably saying to God, What did I do to deserve this? How come I have to suffer like this? It isn't fair. We kind of act like children before God, and God treats us like children. He raises us. He disciplines us. He teaches us. So He does what's best for us. not necessarily what makes us feel warm and fuzzy inside. And that's how we think of love in our culture. And in fact, it's what J. Vernon McGee calls sloppy agape. That's not real love. If a father loves his child, he will train that child. He will discipline that child. So this gives us another reason for suffering. Remember, we had one before. Do you remember what that was? We have to suffer because God has not returned yet, and we have to stay here in a Satan-controlled environment, basically. And that's because of God's grace. God hasn't returned yet because God is a gracious God, and He's going to wait until every believer believes before He returns. So we're left here, and He isn't going to waste time while we are here. We're not here just to mark time until the Lord returns. He wants us to learn. He has a program, an educational program for us while we're still here. We're full-time employees of God, and we're also full-time students of God. We've got plenty to do. There is a lot to do, and God isn't going to waste time. Now, let's, in verse 7 through 11, we'll break this down into four aspects of discipline, or God's training program. He'll tell us four things about it. First, let's read it. 7 through 11 says, "It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as seemed best to them. But He disciplines us for our good, so that we may share His holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have become trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness." Now, the first aspect of discipline is the requirement. What do we need to learn from God's discipline? And the requirement is endurance. And in fact, you actually learn to endure from God's discipline. It says it is for discipline that you endure. Now, in order to learn from discipline, we have to stick with it. We have to endure it. And that's what he's saying. And God's training program is going to teach us to do that. That's part of what his training program is all about. He's going to teach us to endure patiently. Now, there's the old joke, you know, you have to be careful if you pray to God for patience. He's going to give you something to be patient about. Well, that's part of God's training program. He gives us something to be patient about. You don't even have to pray for it. He'll do that because He wants to teach us patient endurance. In fact, the essence of a good ministry has to be the ability to stick with it, no matter what your ministry is. And each one of you, as a believer, has a gift from God and has a ministry, therefore. And the main thing to remember about that is stick with it. Don't give it up. That's the main thing. In the midst of all kinds of discouragements, because you're going to get discouraged. I guarantee it. I'm the only one who never gets discouraged. And if you believe that, then I have a bridge to sell you. I'm being quite facetious. We all get discouraged. We all have things constantly that are designed by Satan and his guys to discourage us. And what God is trying to teach us is endure patiently. So God's discipline program only works And it's a training program. So what's the result of training program? We'll get to that down in verse 11, where it talks about those who've been trained by his discipline program. Our attitude has to be right in order to learn what we need to learn. If we, let me put it this way. God's discipline program can produce a very ugly person. Because if we get disciplined, if we have trials, if we have discouragements, if we become bitter about them, then we'll be pretty ugly people. But God, if we respond with the correct attitude, we can become better people. And that's why the little saying that Chester used to say all the time, we can become bitter or we can become better. That's our choice when God trains us. Because He's going to train us with things that seem very uncomfortable at the time. So the only thing that keeps suffering from being a blessing rather than a curse is our attitude towards it. And that's God's program. He says, if you have to suffer, you endure it patiently. That's what He's trying to teach us. So the requirement is endurance. What does it indicate? Second aspect of God's discipline. What does it indicate? Well, discipline indicates our family connection with God. Verse 8 says, but if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. So if you have to suffer, if you have something you have to endure, discouragement-wise or any-wise, then that's saying something, that God is training you as a believer. And He educates different people differently. Now, some of us can learn from God's Word and just believe it and not have to suffer as much. Now, others of us, we need to learn a little harder. And He gives us a little more to endure because we have more to learn. So that's a sign that God is training us. Now, if you look at it that way, it makes it easier to take, doesn't it? I mean, we need to have endurance. Well, if you look at it from the standpoint, God is training me, He's teaching me something, then it makes it somewhat easier to endure. Now, I want to point out something. And remember I said that God's training program, discipline, doesn't always imply correction. Because suffering does not always indicate we're out of fellowship with God. And that's important to remember. Because, I have a personal experience, but it didn't bother me. I thought it was rather humorous at the time. Because so those of you who know I have a twitchy stomach. And I've had a twitchy stomach since I was in my 20s. Kind of almost an ulcer, but not quite. And Carl and I joke about that all the time because he has a twitchy stomach too. Anyway, I was in a church one time and I was feeling bad and I told somebody, well, I have a twitchy stomach. It's a pre-ulcer type thing. And he kind of stepped back and looked very holy and said, well, you better get straight with the Lord. You know. After he got up off the floor, I didn't knock him down. I just kind of laughed. And, you know, but some people have this idea that if you're suffering, if anything's wrong, then you must be out of fellowship and God is punishing you. Well, that's because they have a wrong idea of what the word discipline means. It's a training program. It can be corrective, but not necessarily. And if you try to figure out God's training program for somebody else, which is none of your business in the first place, you don't have any basis. How do you know if it's corrective or not? Look at 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20 clearly says that we can suffer for not as punishment. Verse 20 says, "For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God." So you can do something that's right and still suffer for it. And that's pleasing to God. Why? Because that's part of what He wants us to learn, is to endure with patience. God is the perfect Father. He will never let a child go uneducated. Now, we may not like that. I like to tell God, you know, I think I've learned enough. It's okay now. But God is a perfect Father, and He knows when we need education. And He will never let us go uneducated. Now, the illustration, another aspect of God's discipline, is that it has an illustration. And that illustration is an earthly father. What a tremendous responsibility earthly fathers have, because earthly fathers serve as an illustration of God's discipline to their children. So it says in verse 9, "Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them." Now, earthly fathers then should discipline their children. They should train them, educate them, correct them. And if we do so, and we do so fairly, then our children should respect us for it. Now, "we respected them," in verse 9, is a middle voice verb. Now, what that means to this context is you could translate, "we gave them our respect." So it's the child's responsibility. It's an imperfect. That indicates continual action in the past. So we always respected our fathers when they disciplined us. That's the ideal situation. But earthly fathers have limitations. First, they are limited by time. Look at verse 10. "For they disciplined us for a short time." Short time is literally for a few days. In the scheme of things, the father's headship over the children is a very short time. Think of it in terms of eternity. The father's headship over his children is very, very brief. And that's a limitation on how much we can educate them. They're limited also by wisdom. You know what? Earthly fathers don't know all the facts. We can't always know what's best for our children. I mean, we try to know what's best and we try to act accordingly, but we can't know everything. But God does know everything, and He always, always has our benefit, our good in mind. So what a perfect Father He is. Because He knows everything, and He still is always working towards our good. So look at your suffering that way. God is a perfect Father. He knows what's best for me. You know, if you look around the world is constantly trying to convince us that this isn't true. Constantly. If you suffer, then they're trying to... Did you ever have somebody say, "Well, how can a loving God allow suffering?" They don't understand. That's part of God's program. He knows what's best for me, and He's allowing me to suffer. Because that's the best thing for me. In fact, if you look around, it doesn't look like God is doing things for our benefit, does it? Look at verse 11. It says that. Says, "All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful." So if you look around the world and You look at the suffering, you say, this is sorrowful, this is horrible. How can God do that? Well, because God has a program in mind, and God can see more than we can. He can see everything. He knows everything. So it's not up to us to decide His motives are bad. Do you think God is just being capricious when a hurricane roars through a city in the United States? You think God is just, I'm going to stir things up a little just to see what happens. I'm getting bored, so He sends a hurricane. God isn't capricious. He knows what's best for everybody, and He acts accordingly. So the conclusion, back in verse 9, it says, "Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live?" Now notice, our obligation to God is greater than our obligation to our earthly parents. It's stated clearly there. He says, we had earthly fathers to discipline us. That's the training program. And we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits? So, our obligation to God, we were supposed to give respect to earthly parents because they disciplined us. But God, we're to be subject to because He disciplines us. It says, it calls Him here the Father of spirits. That's a counterpoint to earthly fathers. We have a fleshly father. In fact, it's in verse 9, it says, fathers of our flesh. That's the literal translation if you have a marginal note in your Bible. So it says, we had fathers of the flesh to discipline us, and then we have a father of spirits. That's referring to God. And if we subject ourselves to Him, we will live. And that word live, remember, living refers to more than just being able to breathe and having a beating heart. It refers to living as God intended, with all the benefits that go with that. That's what living is in the Bible. Now, it can refer to physical life as well. Because what happens if we ignore God and ignore God and ignore God? We saw in 1 Corinthians that because of the communion problems they were having, some of them had actually died, physically died. Now, they were still believers. They were still saved. But God corrected them to the point of physical death. So both ideas included in that little phrase in verse 9, be subject to the Father of spirits and live. Live as God intended us to live. Now the purpose of discipline is given in the last part of verse 10 and the first part of verse 11. And summed up, it is for our good and for our goodness. It says in verse 10, He disciplines us for our good, so that we may share His holiness. So our good and our goodness, if you want to call it that. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now the word trained in verse 11, it says those who have been trained by it. It's a different word than the word for discipline. Verse 11 is the word gymnazo. Gymnazo is a word that means literally, and I think we've had this before, haven't we? It's the English word gymnasium comes from that word gymnazo. Literally, it means to exercise in the nude. To exercise in the nude. Now, how does that come back to gymnasium? Well, in the culture that this book was written in, you know, we go to the gym and we wear gym shorts and light clothing, light shoes. They went all the way to get rid of the encumbrances of clothing. And when they trained naked. It's just that simple. They didn't want clothes to inhibit their movements. Remember back up at verse 1 in chapter 12? It says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance." That's the illustration he was using of the athletes. They laid aside their encumbrances. And we noted when we read that verse that you don't run a marathon in an overcoat and galoshes. It doesn't make sense. Well, that's what the training does to us. It gets rid of all that stuff. That's how God trains us, and He gets rid of all those encumbrances so that we can be trained. Now, don't show up nude next Sunday. But that's what the word means. It means to get rid of all those encumbrances, just like the athletes of the day didn't wear clothing because it encumbered them. So that's what he's saying the purpose of discipline is, to get rid of all that excess junk. You see a lot of believers running around in overcoats and galoshes, running marathons. That's silly. We need to get rid of that stuff so that we can run faster. And that's exactly the purpose of his training. And he trains, verse 7, "It is for discipline that you endure." God trains us for marathons, not for sprints. We're to take the long haul, the long view here. So that's his training program. It involves a time element. It says in verse 11, "All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. Yet, to those who have been trained by it," and there's the time element, once the training program is complete, and that's a perfect passive participle, that word gymnazo. Once you've been trained, once your training is complete, then all the encumbrances have been removed, then you will have endurance. So that's the purpose of God's training program. Notice the word afterwards in verse 11. It says, "All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness." So after it's over, after God's training program is done, then we should have grown. We should be mature believers. Some of us mature, some of us don't. Some of us become bitter, ugly believers. Some of us become mature believers. And the difference is what? Mental attitude. If you patiently endure, you have a good mental attitude, you will complete God's training program and be a mature believer. But first, it may make you miserable. It may make you very miserable. Now I'm going to stop here because we're getting short on time. And next hour we'll pick up with, well then, how should I respond to God's training program? With all this doctrine under our belt about discipline, about training, what should my response be? Well, that's going to be verse 12 through 17. Look at verse 12. "Therefore," it's going to tell us what we need to do with this. We'll pick up there next hour. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for this section in Hebrews, and thank you for your discipline program. We know that it seems harsh and it seems sorrowful at the time, but we pray that we can accept it with a correct mental attitude so that we can learn patient endurance and we can become mature believers, and that is pleasing to you. In Christ's name, amen.